going to return it to him when she had her new body, when she saw him again. Her power source dropped low again, the colors of the world dimmed beyond her sensor's eye. Nothing else. Lynn Cinder frowned sympathetically. Then I'm sorry, I can't help you. Mech 6.0 analyzed the situation again, calculating the potential worth of the locket and the importance that she received a new body and soon. But despite her logical reasoning telling her that the locket might be valued high enough to complete the trade, there was a new factor involved in the calculation. The value of her one possession, something that had been Dataran's. The value of his smile when she returned it to him. She knew the decision was illogical, that she would be returning nothing at all if she didn't get a new body, and yet she still found herself tucking the holographic card against her torso and turning away, which was when she realized that she had nowhere to go. And besides, she wouldn't make it very far. She spotted the used android dealer down the way, and a darkness settled in her vision, washing all the color away entirely. Her treads clattered as she started back through the crowd. Wait! Pausing, she spun back to face the mechanic, who was rubbing her fingers against her temple again, leaving a dark smudge on her skin.
You remind me of a friend of mine, Aiko, also an android, she said. Then she added, gesturing to the card, plus, my little sister really loves that guy, so here, I think I might have something. Hang on.
Pulling herself from the chair, she headed toward the back of the booth. Mech 6.0 waited as Lynn Cinder shuffled aside toolboxes and miscellaneous bits of machinery.
Well, she's not a huge improvement, she said. But I do have this.
She emerged from behind a towering shelf with the body of a girl draped over one arm. Shouldering aside a toolbox, she dropped the girl on the table with a thud. A limp arm splayed out toward Mech 6.0, and her scanner picked up on precisely trimmed fingernails, the natural curve of her fingers, the faint blue veining beneath her skin. And then she spotted the near invisible imprint across the girl's wrist. A barcode. She was an escort droid. She's almost 30 years old, said Cinder, and in pretty bad shape. I was really just keeping her around for spare parts. She adjusted the head so Mech 6.0 could see her face, which was beautiful and convincingly lifelike, with dark irises and sleek black hair. With her empty gaze and a rosy flush to her cheeks, she looked like she was dead, but only recently so. If I remember right, something was wrong with her voice box. I think she'd gone mute and the last owner didn't want to bother with replacing it. She was also prone to occasional power surges, so you might want to look into replacing her wiring and getting a new battery as soon as you can. Cinder brushed some dust off the escort droid's brow. And on top of that, with her being so old, I don't really know how compatible she's going to be with your personality chip. You might find that you experience some weird glitches. But if you want her. In response, Mech 6.0 held out the holographic card.
So, you're an electrician? Said Tam Sovan, scanning her profile on his port screen.
Mech 6.0 nodded, smiling as she had seen humans do. It had taken her nearly 2 weeks to set up a net profile and managed to steal some proper work clothes that fit her, even though it went against everything her android code told her. Still, she had done it, and she had made her way back to the shipyard, and she was here, with a humanoid body and a convincing identity, and Dataran's locket snapped snugly in her pocket.
And you specialize in classic pod ships and cruisers, particularly the luxury lines. Impressive.
He glanced up again, as if trying to decide if the profile could be believed. She kept smiling.
And you're mute.
She nodded. He squinted suspiciously for a moment before going over her profile again.
Well, We certainly do work on a lot of luxury lines like these, which she knew. And I have been faced with a high turnover of electricians lately, which she also knew. I'd have to start you at a base salary until you prove you can do the work. You understand that? She nodded. Having never received a salary before, she did not even know what she would do with that measly base pay. All right. Well, let's give it a shot, he said, as if he couldn't quite believe he was saying it. Mech 6.0 wasn't sure if it was her muteness that had him unconvinced about her, or the fact that her escort body was startlingly attractive, even in her drab work clothing. And what was your name again? He said, before flinching at her patient smile. Right, sorry. He scanned through her profile again. Hoshi Star. Mech 6.0, no. Hoshi Star nodded.
His eyes narrowed suspiciously, but then he shrugged.
If you say so.
Well then, welcome aboard, Hoshi Mei. I have a project that I think will be perfect for you. This way. She braced herself before rising off the chair. Her personality chip hadn't synced quite right with the outdated escort body, and Linsinder was right. It had caused a peculiar glitch that manifested itself whenever she walked. The effort caused pain to shoot through the wires from her legs to her chest, burning into her synapses. The first time it had happened, she had gasped and collapsed onto the sidewalk and sat trembling on the ground for close to an hour while blinding light flooded her senses. Pain. She had never known pain before. Androids should not have been able to experience it at all, but she had no doubt that's what it was. Just as the human brain used pain to recognize when something was horribly wrong, her processor was warning her that this body was not hers, that this combination could not last. The third time it had happened, she had considered going back to the market and pleading with Linsinder to take the body away, but she had ultimately refused to do that, not before she saw Dataran again. With time, the pain was becoming more bearable, even if only because she was learning to compartmentalize it away from the rest of her sensory input. Clenching her teeth, she pushed herself to her feet and followed Tam Shifu out into the shipyard. She began searching for him the moment she stepped into the massive hangar. Her eyes were darting from human to human, searching for a graceful frame and an easy smile. She'd been worried ever since she'd left, terrified that he hadn't fully recovered from the fall into the oil, terrified that she hadn't gotten to him in time. Though her gaze darted from one corner of the yard to the other as they walked, there was no sign of the young engineer. Here we are, said Tam, gesturing to the space yacht, the Orion Classic. Over the past 2 weeks, the exterior had been nearly completed, but Star could guess that the interior still had plenty of work to be done.
This is for one of our premium clients, and he doesn't want to spare a single expense. But of course, he's on a tight schedule, as they always are. I'll track down some electrical blueprints for you. And, you'll be reporting directly to Wing Jun here. Dataran, come meet our newest electrician.
He came around from the front of the ship, a port screen in his hand and a stylus tucked behind one ear. And a surge of electricity coursed so fast through Star's body, she thought for a moment she would experience an actual meltdown. But she didn't, and when he politely bowed his head, she remembered to politely bow hers as well.
It's nice to meet you, he said. You'll be working on the Orion Classic with us?
She smiled, but Tam was already waving his hand.
That's right. She says she's an expert with the classics. Keep her busy. Let's see what she can do, all right?
He glanced at the port.
I have to check on the racer. Dataran, do you mind showing her the ropes?
Not at all, sir.
Tam was gone almost before he'd finished talking, and Dataran was chuckling after him.
Don't take it personally. He's like that toward everyone.
His kind smile made the pain of standing recede almost fully from her thoughts, and Star beamed hopefully back.
I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
Lashes fluttering, she opened her lips, but of course, there was nothing. Flinching, she patted a hand against her throat. Dataran frowned.
Did you lose your voice?
She shrugged. Close enough.
Oh, then, should I call you...
He frowned, not able to come up with anything appropriate on the spot. Perking up, she grabbed his sleeve and dragged him back toward the front of the ship, where she gestured up at the name that had been freshly painted on its side. Child of the Stars.
Stars? Star?
When she beamed again, he laughed.
That wasn't so hard. It's a pleasure to meet you, Star.
She tried her best to speak through her eyes, her stretched lips, her trembling fingers, which had released his sleeve and were too afraid to reach for him again. It's me, she thought, willing him to understand. I'm the one who rescued you. I'm the one who found your locket. It's me. It's me. It's me. But Dataran just jerked his head toward the landing gear.
Come on. I'll show you the engine room and how far we've gotten in the wiring so far. Which isn't much. We could definitely use your help.
Before he turned away, he glanced up toward the cockpit windows one level up, and his mouth quirked fast to one side. Star followed the look. Ochita Maiko and her father were sitting in the cockpit. He appeared to be teaching her something, gesturing at the different controls. But Maiko had spotted Dataran outside and didn't seem to be listening. Star had a sense that the bashful smile Maiko gave him had not been intended for her or Maiko's father to see.
Oh, it's beautiful, said Maiko, sitting on Dataran's other side.
Star knew she was talking about the ship that was about to leave the hangar, a sleek, flashy thing that had been commissioned for the annual space race to Neptune,
which everyone knew was a fallacy.
The race officially ended at Jupiter, but the sponsors claimed that didn't have the same ring to it. It was a beautiful ship, with its elongated thrusters and needle-sharp nose. The painters had outdone themselves, creating a very realistic montage of New Beijing's skyline across its frame. But Star did not care so much for the ship. Her attention had gone back up to the ceiling as it pulled back to reveal the endless sky. Although her new life as a human had given her the opportunity to gaze up at the night sky as often as she wished, her eyes never tired of it. The sense of vastness and eternity, the yearning to see what else the universe had to offer, even for one as small and unimportant as she was. She didn't think that Maiko had glanced up at all since the ceiling had lifted to allow the ship an exit. Of course, she had already been to space countless times, would be going again as soon as the Orion Classic was finished, another 2 or 3 weeks at the most. Ochita Shifu had been growing more and more impatient, urging them to tighten the schedule, to work longer hours, to finish early. Maiko and Dataran, on the other hand, seemed to become more and more miserable as each step of the rebuild was completed. If anything, Dataran's pace had slowed as the ship's deadline loomed. Star pulled her attention away as Dataran was explaining the different features of the racer, gesturing at the elegant curve of its back, the power behind the rocket boosters, and on and on. Star was more interested in the sound of his voice than his words, the subtle inflections, the careful pronunciation of very technical terms, the way he talked faster when something struck him as ingenious. Listening to him felt like being plugged into a power dock, feeling the gentle current of electricity warm and enliven her. She glanced over at him, and the contented smile fell from her lips. Dataran had laced his fingers with Maiko's and was holding her hand on his knee, while his other hand drew explanatory pictures in the air. Something flashed in Star's chest. A spark, maybe, or a power surge? Her fingers curled into fists, tightening with the urge to reach across Dataran and rip their hands away from each other. to shove Maiko aside, to wrap her own fingers around Maiko's neck. Grimacing, she turned away and waited for the flood of white to fade from her vision. It was not the first time such horrible thoughts had come into her head. Generally, she found that she enjoyed Maiko's company. She was a smart girl who talked just enough to keep Star from feeling strange that she couldn't participate in the conversation, and who had insisted that Star take the occasional walk with her in a nearby park when she deemed that Star had been working too hard lately. But when they were with Dadaran, which was more often than not, Star found herself withdrawing away from Maiko's friendliness and discovering a darker part of her programming. She figured it had to be another glitch, this strange desire to hurt a human being, which seemed to emerge only when Dadaran found some subtle way to touch Maiko. Just placing a hand on her elbow or brushing a lock of hair off her shoulder. These tiny moments made Star feel like she was disintegrating inside. Maybe the malfunctions were getting worse. Maybe a new processor would help. Had she earned enough money now to afford one? She wasn't sure, and she needed to weigh it with her need for a power source that didn't threaten to die near the end of every workday. Star, are you all right? Prying her eyes open, she forced herself to look at Dadaran. A quick glance confirmed that their hands remained entwined. But she still forced her lips to curl upward and her head to bob up and down. The concern lingered in Dadaran's gaze, but then a cheer rose up from the audience and the racer was taking flight, and Dadaran and Maiko shifted their giddy attention back to the spectacle. Star tried to focus on the ship, or even the starry night sky, but she couldn't get the image of her own pale fingers around Maiko's neck to fade from her thoughts. It disturbed her that her processor was capable of imagining something so horrific, and the shipyard mechanic's words flashed through her head.
The fact is, an unpredictable android is a dangerous one.
Was she unpredictable? Was she dangerous? She felt the shudder along her wires as soon as the ship lifted up off the ground to another uproarious cheer. Her energy was running out. She switched her internal settings to power-saving mode, and the world dulled to shades of gray. The sound in her ears a jumbled hum as her audio receptors stopped sorting and cataloging the input. She set a hand on Dadaran's shoulder and climbed to her feet. The movement came with a jolt of pain that threatened to cripple her. She grimaced and waited a moment before waving goodbye.
Where are you going? Dadaran pointed at the ship. It will only be another few minutes. We can take a hover together.
Her fan whirred faster. She had made up a home address that was near to his on her third day at the shipyard, and they often left together when the workday was over. Sometimes, Maiko joined them too, and Star thought she and Dadaran might have plans that didn't involve her. And yet, they were always so good to not suggest she was an unwanted intruder. Those hover rides, simply listening to Dadaran talk and laugh, were some of the best moments of her short existence. But this time, she shook her head. She needed to find a charging dock, and quickly. He did not expect her to explain, an unexpected benefit of being mute, and so he simply nodded, still frowning, and let her go. But Star had not gone a dozen steps before she felt the power drain from her legs. Warnings pounded into her consciousness, but they were too late. She was falling. Her head crashed into the hard floor, and she lay there with her arms twitching so hard she worried they would pull themselves right out of her shoulder sockets. She picked out Maiko and Dadaran's yells, even from the chaotic roaring in her ears, and then they were above her, tenderly turning her onto her back. She scanned their faces, recognizing shock, fear, panic, uncertainty. Dadaran was speaking, but she couldn't comprehend. Maiko was pressing a hand against her forehead. Her processor began to flicker back to life, programs gradually rebooting themselves. Though she still had no control over her legs, she could once again make out Dadaran's concerned questions, raining down on her like shooting stars. Then, Maiko laid a hand on Dadaran's arms, and said with calm authority, "Bring her some water." With a frantic nod, he pushed himself to his feet. When he had gone, Maiko sighed, her gaze full of sympathy, as she tucked a lock of Star's hair behind an ear. "The fit seems to have passed, but just lie still." Star withered from embarrassment to know that Dadaran had seen her like this. "I'm sorry if I offend you by asking this," Maiko whispered, glancing in the direction Dadaran had gone. "But are you an escort droid, Star May?" Eyes widening, Star tried to sit up, only succeeding when Maiko tucked an arm beneath her shoulders and lifted her. She realized the thought of Maiko knowing her secret terrified her, but Maiko's smile was kind. "Don't worry. I don't think Dadaran has noticed anything, and I won't tell anyone. You are very convincing." Her lashes dipped, and she murmured, "But like recognizes like." Star scrutinized her. "Like recognizes like." The words repeated in her head, but she couldn't seem to compute them. Then Maiko reached a hand for the back of her neck, where Star had noticed that strange dark spot a dozen times since her return, always hastily covered up. "I'm not an android," she said, shaking her head. She cleared her throat and dared to meet Star's gaze again. "But I am a cyborg." Cyborg. The definition was in her database, but Star doubted its accuracy. "Maiko? Lovely young Maiko?" Maiko glanced around to make sure no one was near. They had been sitting near the paint booth, which offered a good view of the ship's takeoff without all the crowds, and no one was paying them any attention. Sitting back on her heels, Maiko pulled up the wide sleeve of her silk kimono. Star watched, mesmerized, as Maiko dug her fingers into the flesh of her elbow and began to peel the skin back. A perfect, thin layer of flesh rolled down her arm like a tightly knit sleeve, and beneath the skin was a finely crafted arm made from lightweight carbon fiber polymer, the same material Star's body was constructed from. As soon as Star had seen, Maiko rolled the skin back into place, rubbing at the synthetic until the edges had merged seamlessly back together. Gaping, Star pointed to where Dadaran had gone. "He knows," said Maiko. "I told him as soon as... well..." She stared down at her prosthetic hands, now clutched together in her lap. "As soon as I realized that I was falling in love with him. I thought for sure it would put an end to it all, that he wouldn't want anything to do with me once he knew, but he isn't like that, is he?" A happy flush bloomed across her cheeks, but was smothered as she glanced out toward the rows of ships in all stages of incompletion. And down the lane, the Child of the Stars. "Not that it matters. As soon as the ship is done, we'll be leaving, and nothing will change my father's mind. I know he thinks it's for my own good, but..." Star lifted her head, urging her to continue. "We're leaving the Commonwealth because he's afraid that I'll be selected for the cyborg draft if we stay. I know it's by random selection and the odds are so small, and yet he's convinced that the draft skews toward female cyborgs, and young ones at that. I don't know how he got this into his head, but... that's why he bought the ship, why he's so insistent that they finish it as soon as possible, and when it's done, I'll have to say goodbye." Star thought she detected a shimmer in Maiko's eye, but it was gone just as fast. "I should be grateful, I know that. He's going through so much trouble to keep me safe, but I can't help but feel that I would rather take my chances with the draft if it means being with Dadaran." Star looked away. She knew that feeling so well. The pain that jolted through her vertebrae when she walked, the torture of seeing how his eyes latched onto the bright-colored obi that wrapped around Maiko's body. How agonizing it was, this life of silence and yearning. Yet, how very worth it when his eyes found hers, and she could still recall the look of disbelief and gratitude and curiosity that had passed over him when she'd pulled him from the oil tank.
Here, I usually keep a portable charger with me, said Maiko, pulling her handbag toward her. Dadaran will be back soon, and it will be difficult for me to explain why you aren't drinking any water unless you seem recovered. Is the receptacle in your neck? Star nodded and tried her best to be grateful as Maiko opened the panel beneath her ear and inserted the charging cord. But there was something dark lingering still, making her dig her own fingertips into her thighs. An impatience with Maiko, a throbbing irritation with her presence. Ever since she'd returned to the shipyard, Star had thought of Maiko's departure as an ending. And a beginning. And that feeling grew stronger by the day. She was only biding her time until Maiko was gone. Then she would buy a new body that didn't rebel every time she walked, and she would return the locket that contained the whole galaxy to Dadaran and explain everything to him. She would tell him that something in a smile had changed her, back when it shouldn't have been possible for her to be changed. She would tell him that she was the one who had saved his life, because something about him made her unpredictable and maybe dangerous, and she couldn't exist in a world without him. Star dragged a finger across the screen embedded in the wall, and the lights of the cockpit went dark. She swirled it clockwise. They gradually brightened again. Counterclockwise, they dimmed darker. A tap here to raise the temperature, here to lower it. She tested every command. Play music, adjust the air filtration system, seal the cockpit door, heat the cockpit floor. Place an order for a beverage through the automated beverage service. Confident that everything was working just as it should, she shut the panel of wiring beneath the screen and gathered up the tools that she'd used, hooking them neatly into her tool belt. She then paused, preparing herself to walk before heading toward the ship's main exit. Her body screamed at her as she walked, and she knew that the exertion was beginning to take its toll on her system. For weeks, she had done her best to ignore the pain and the knowledge that soon or later, her escort droid body would rebel and reject the installed personality chip altogether. And there were times when she felt she was holding her body together through sheer willpower. It wouldn't be long, though, before she could afford a new body. Just a little while longer. A voice made her foot catch as she paused on the exit ramp. Dadaran. Turning, she peered into the common room that divided the front of the ship from the living areas. An assortment of comfortable seats, accented with silk pillows and cashmere throw blankets, were arranged around a gurgling aquarium that reached from the floor to the tiled ceiling. The brightly colored fish had been brought to their new home a few days before and seemed content to float mindlessly among their artificial coral reef. Star crept toward Maiko's rooms, her back against the wall, aware that this was not something she would have done when she was Mech 6.0. Spying, sneaking, eavesdropping? Androids were not made to be curious. And yet, there she was, standing beside the doorframe and listening to the hiccuping sounds of a girl crying.
If we could just talk to your father, show him how much we love each other.
He'll never agree to it. He doesn't think you could keep me safe.
Dadaran released a disgruntled sigh.
I know.
And I couldn't stand it if anything happened to you either. I just need time. I can get us a ship.
It may not be anything like this, anything like what you're used to, but...
That doesn't matter. I would go, she sobbed, anywhere with you. But Dadaran...
But what?
Her crying grew louder.
Do you really want to live your whole life with a cyborg?
Star dared to inch closer, shifting her weight so she could peer through the crack between the lavish mahogany doors. These rooms were completed. The ship was almost finished, but for some last detail work on the front end. Scheduled departure was in just 2 days. She spotted them standing near Maiko's net screen desk. And Dadaran was embracing her, one hand cupping the base of her head
as she buried her face into his shoulder. Memorizing the pose, Star brought her hand up to the back of her neck and dug her fingertips into her own hair. Try to imagine what that must be like.
Maiko, please, Dataran whispered. Your arms could be made out of broom handle for all I care.
Star adjusted her audio interface, so loud that she could hear the rustle of fabric, his breathing, her sniffles.
All I care about is what's in here.
He pulled far enough away that he could slide his hand around and place it over a chrysanthemum flower painted onto the silk of her kimono, right below her collarbone. Star followed the movement, felt her own chest, her own hard plating, with the slightest bit of softness from her layer of synthetic skin. But no heartbeat. No pulse.
You're perfect, Maiko. And beautiful, and I love you. I want to marry you.
The words, spoken so quietly, were like a gunshot in Star's head. She flinched and stumbled backward, pressing a hand over one ear. But it was too late. Those words, still smoking, were burned into her database. Maiko gasped, and they were pulled apart, spinning toward the door. Dataran was there in a moment, whipping the doors open, and relief crossed over them both when they saw her.
Oh, Stars, whispered Maiko, placing her own artificial hand over her very real beating heart. I thought you were my father.
Faking apology, Star took a step toward them and gestured at the lights that ran around the room, then at the control panel on the wall. She raised her eyebrows in a question. It was a lie. She had checked all these rooms the day before, and she knew there was a time when she wouldn't have been capable of the falsehood, even an implied one.
Oh, yes, everything seems to be working perfectly, said Dataran, stringing a hand through his hair.
He seemed flustered, while Star felt broken.
I should finish packing,
mumbled Maiko, sounding no more enthusiastic than if she were moving into a prison cell, not the lavish yacht. Ducking her head, she shuffled toward the door.
So many more cases to bring in.
Maiko, wait. Dataran grabbed her wrist, then glanced uncertainly at Star. She turned to inspect the electronics control panel.
I have to try,
he whispered, lowering his head toward Maiko.
I have to at least ask him. He won't say yes. But if he did, if I could convince him that I would take care of you, that I love you, would you say yes?
Star absently punched her fingertips against the screen.
You know that I would,
Maiko responded, her hushed voice breaking on the last word. She sniffed and cleared her throat.
But it doesn't matter. He won't say yes. He won't let me stay.
Then, her soft footsteps padded out toward the ship's exit. Daring to glance over her shoulder, Star saw that Dataran had pressed his forehead against the wall. His fingers dug into his hair. With a heavy sigh, he dragged his palms down his face and looked up at her. She noted darkening circles beneath his eyes and a paleness that seemed all wrong on him.
Ochida Shifu, he's worried for her safety, he said, as if in explanation, then looked away. And I am too, to be honest. But if she leaves, I might never see her again. If I had a ship of my own, but...
Shaking his head, he turned so that he could lean his back against the wall, like he might collapse without its support.
I was actually saving up for one, have been for years, and I almost had enough, along with this antique holograph locket that should have been plenty to make up the difference. But I lost it in that stupid oil tank.
Star pressed a hand against her hip, where the locket sat snugly in her pocket. She'd kept it, waiting, expecting there to be a perfect moment to give it back to him. But the time never seemed right. And in the evenings, when she was alone, She would open it up and let herself get swallowed up by the stars and think about what life would be like when Micah was gone. There would be so many chances, so many opportunities.
I'm sorry, Star. I shouldn't talk about my problems like this. It's not fair when you can't tell me about yours.
He met her gaze again, and she pulled her hand away from the pocket, curling her fingers into a fist. Micah would be gone in 2 days.
Only 2 more days, and then?
Dataran smiled, but it was exhausted and missing all the warmth that had so often interrupted the flow of electricity to her limbs.
Do you have any problems you wish you could talk about, Star?
She nodded.
Maybe you could write them down.
I would read them if you wanted me to. Dropping her gaze, she shook her head. Out in the common room, the aquarium bubbled and hummed, the sound that was meant to be calming now, taking up the entire ship and drowning her.
I understand, said Dataran. I probably haven't shown myself to be the best listener since we met.
But I do wonder what goes on in that head of yours sometimes.
Michael likes you, you know. I think
she hasn't said it, but I think you might be the only friend she has. Star looked away, clenched her fists. Then, daring to meet his gaze again, she lifted a hand and tapped a finger against her hollow chest. Dataran was watching, but uncertain. He didn't understand. Star took a step toward him and tapped the same finger against his heart. He blinked and opened his mouth to speak, but Star leaned forward and kissed him before he could. Just a peck, but she tried to put every unspoken word into it. It's me. It's been me all along. And I may have saved your life, but I would be nothing if it wasn't for you. I would be just another mech droid, and I wouldn't know what it's like to love someone so much I would give up everything for them. But when she pulled away, he looked shocked and horrified and guilty, and she knew he didn't understand. She left the room before Dataran could speak. He didn't call her back, and he didn't come after her. Star fled from the ship and kept going until she was out of the hangar, out of the shipyard, a single lonely android beneath an enormous morning sky, before she reached into her pocket and wrapped her fingers around the locket and a universe that meant nothing to her without him. Unlike the Triton's launch, the launch of the Child of the Stars was a private affair. Some of Uchida Shifu's old co-workers and acquaintances had come out to wish them a safe journey, along with the shipyard staff, but that was all. No friends of Maiko's. Maybe Dataran was right, and she didn't have any, which made Star wonder if it was because she was rich and sheltered, or shy, or because she was cyborg. Star couldn't take her eyes from Dataran, standing sunken-shouldered in the crowd, his eyes haunting the ship as its engines rumbled and the lifter magnets beneath the hangar's floor hummed with life. He was probably hoping to catch a glimpse of Maiko through the windows, although all but the cockpit windows were so small, it was an impossible hope. Star wondered if they had seen each other at all since she had stumbled upon them 2 days before. The words she'd overheard still bounced around in Star's head, and she ached from the memory, almost as much as she ached from the kiss. She had not seen Dataran since that morning. She'd been avoiding him, unable to stand his sorrow over losing Maiko, and whatever kind, sensible things he would say to explain why Maiko was the one he loved, and why Star would never be, even after Maiko was gone. As she stared, the crowd shifted around Dataran. A figure moved gracefully between the bodies. Star cocked her head and squinted, staring, waiting. Dataran gave a start, then whipped his head around. His gaze fell on Maiko, who was wearing plain coveralls, and he drew back in surprise. Her smile was shy but bright as she pressed up closer to him and whispered. She lifted her hand, and something small, glinted from her palm. Though Star was too far away to see, she knew it was the locket. Her locket. Her galaxy. Dataran shook his head in disbelief and glanced back toward the ship. Then, on the verge of a smile, he took Maiko into his arms and kissed her. Star pressed her fingertips against her own lips, imagining. Her arm weakened, and she let it fall to her lap. It wouldn't be long now. She could feel her body beginning to rebel. It was in the pain that was almost constant now, a stabbing sensation that tore through her legs, even when she was only sitting. It was in the frequent loss of control in her twitching limbs. It was in the blackness that clouded in around her vision, and how she always thought this would be the last time before, after a long agonizing moment, she returned to consciousness again. Footsteps thumped in the common room and paused in the doorway. Star turned her head away.
1 minute to take off, said Uchida Shifu. Do you want to come sit with me in the cockpit?
She shook her head and adjusted the sleeve of the silk kimono so that he was sure to see the metal plating of her arms. The synthetic skin had been easy to remove, and though seeing her android insides was disconcerting, the limb reminded her of the three-fingered prongs from her Mech 6.0 body, and there was a comforting familiarity in that. Uchida sighed heavily behind her.
I'm doing this for you, Maiko. It's better this way. And he's just a boy. You'll get over this.
When Star didn't respond, he huffed and withdrew from the doorway.
Fine. Be angry. Throw your tantrum if you have to. Just put your skin graft back on before you snag that material. Whatever point you're trying to make, it isn't working. The reminder of what you are just further convinces me that I'm making the right decision.
Then, he was gone. Star returned her gaze to the window, the hangar, the crowd. Hundreds of mech droids lined up against the charging wall. Maiko and Dataran. Not minutes had gone by before she heard the magnets engage and felt the ship rise off the ground. The crowd cheered. Dataran wrapped his arms around Maiko, and she was beaming, and though Star didn't think Maiko could see her, she felt almost like they were looking at each other in that moment, and that Maiko knew precisely the decision that Star had made. And she, too, knew it was the right one. Then the thrusters engaged, and the ship was climbing up out of the hangar, over the glittering, sprawling city of New Beijing, and Dataran was gone. Suddenly weary, Star leaned her head against the window. Her audio input dulled to a faint, distant hum as the Child of the Stars speared through the wisps of cloud and the sky turned from bright blue to blushing pink and pale orange. Her fan was struggling inside her torso, moving slower and slower. Then, so suddenly she almost missed it. Space opened up before her. Black and expansive and endless and filled with more stars than she could ever drink in. More stars than she could ever compute. It was so much better than a holograph. Her wires quivered as the last dregs of power sizzled through them. Her fingers jolted and twitched and then lay still. She was smiling as she imagined herself as one more star in the sea of millions, and her body decided it had had enough, and she felt the exact moment when her power source gave up and the hum of electricity extinguished. But she was already vast and bright and endless.
The Mechanic. The hover was waiting outside the palace's northwest gate. Kai feigned nonchalance as he made his way through the garden's path. Nancy's lightweight android body tucked under one arm and a pack with a hooded sweatshirt slung over his opposite shoulder. He didn't hurry, but he wasn't meandering either. He pretended that he was unconcerned about being noticed. It wasn't like he couldn't be tracked. He had not one, but two identity chips hidden beneath his skin, and his security team were experts at keeping tabs on him. It wasn't a secret that he was leaving, but he didn't want it to be public knowledge either. The day was hotter than it had been all week, and the humidity made his hair cling to the back of his neck. The garden gate opened without a sound, though he could feel the security camera overhead following his movements. He ignored it and approached the hover with the same straight-spined confidence he'd learned to do every task with, no matter how trivial. He waved his ID-embedded wrist over the hover scanner, and the door whispered open, revealing a spacious interior behind the tinted glass windows. Hidden speakers emitted the soothing notes of a flautist. Though the air inside had been cooled to a pleasant temperature, an ice bucket in the corner was still slick with condensation. It displayed an assortment of flavored waters and cold teas. Kai pushed Nancy in first, before settling onto one of the upholstered benches. The door shut, and he realized that, despite the tranquility of the hover's interior, his heart had started to pound.
"Good afternoon, Crown Prince Kaito. What is your destination?" the hover asked in an artificially feminine voice.
He rubbed away a bead of sweat before it could drip down his temple. "The market at City Center." The hover lifted off the street and glided away from the palace, taking the looping drive around the protective exterior wall before dipping down the hill toward New Beijing. Through the dark-paned glass, Kai could see his city shimmering with waves of heat, the windows and metal structures glinting beneath the afternoon sun. He loved his city. He loved his country. He would risk anything to protect it. Inhaling sharply, he unclipped the port screen from his belt and pulled up the net. The profile he'd looked up days ago greeted him on the main page. Lin Cinder, licensed mechanic, location, New Beijing Weekly Market, booth number 771, 480 ratings, 98.7% client approval. There was no picture of the mechanic or the shop, but Lin Cinder had a reputation of being the best mechanic in the city, and the approval rating was higher than anyone else Kai had looked up. He'd first heard of Lin Cinder from one of the royal mechanics at the palace, who was charged with keeping the royal androids well-maintained. When they had failed to properly diagnose Nancy after running the basic tests, Lin Cinder's name had come up as the best chance for fixing the android. Of course, they had all thought Kai was crazy for being so invested in an android. "We'll order up a new one," they said. "Run it through the palace budget, standard procedure. She's just a tutor android, after all, programmed with a few assistant apps. Easily replaced, Your Highness, not for you to worry about." But they were wrong. Nancy was not easily replaced. The information she had, or that Kai hoped she had, was not easily replaced at all. He returned the port screen to his belt and pulled the android toward him, peering into the sensor light that had been black for days. Once again, he sought out the minuscule power button. Once again, nothing happened. He sighed. Though he'd long given up hope that Nancy would just wake up and spill all her secrets, her power cell was fully charged and, according to the diagnostics tests, everything was working properly. No one could figure out what was wrong, and the timing couldn't have been worse. "We're so close," he whispered to himself. Leaning back against the bench, he dragged a hand through his hair. Frustration had been growing behind his rib cage for weeks now, ever since that lunar thaumaturge Sybil Mira had come to visit for her ambassadorial mission. She was a witch, a creepy mind-controlling witch. Just knowing that she was in the palace set Kai's teeth on edge. It was like he could feel her eyes following him, or sense her breathing down the back of his neck, even when she wasn't in the same room. He didn't know if it was his own paranoia or some lunar trick, but he did know that he couldn't wait for her to leave him and his family and his country alone. Then, his father had become ill. No,
not ill. His father had the plague. His father was dying, and there was absolutely nothing Kai could do to stop it. And now, this. Nancy malfunctioning right when he was sure she'd found something useful? Something priceless? Something regarding the whereabouts of Princess Selene. He knew it was a risk that if Sybil Mira or any Lunar learned that he was trying to find the lost princess, it could lead to a political catastrophe between Earth and Luna. He knew that Queen Levana wouldn't be quick to forgive the fact that Kai was adamantly attempting to usurp her. But it was a risk worth taking. Finding Selene and putting her back on the Lunar throne was his best chance. And possibly his only chance of ridding himself of Queen Levana and her threats toward the Commonwealth. Threats of war. Threats of mass enslavement. Almost worse, threats of a marriage alliance. It could not be allowed. He had to find the true Lunar heir before it was too late. He and Nancy had been researching for months, and though there had been countless false claims and dead ends, lately, he'd been sure they were getting somewhere. Nancy had heard about a Lunar doctor who was suspected of having an involvement with the lost princess's disappearance, and also a potential relationship with an Earthen woman years before. It was a thin hope, the thinnest of hopes, but Kai's instincts told him there was more to it. He'd ordered Nancy to find out as much information as she could on the doctor and this Earthen woman, and then, 2 days later, nothing. Nancy was dead to the world. It was enough to make him want to put his head through the hover car's control board.
"Approaching the city center," lilted the robotic voice, snapping Kai from his thoughts. "Where would you like to deboard?"
He glanced out the window. The streets were cast in shadow from the high-rise buildings in every direction. Storefronts sparkled with net-screen advertisements and pristine escort droids modeling the latest fashions and gadgets. A block away, he could see the edge of the market, all tight-squeezed booths and bustling crowds. "Here is fine," he said, reaching into the pack and pulling out the gray-hooded sweatshirt he'd smuggled from the palace. The most discreet item of clothing he owned. The hover swooped to the edge of the street. The magnets hummed as it lowered itself to the ground.
"Shall I wait here for your return?"
"Please," he said, threading his arms through the sleeves and tugging up the zipper. "I shouldn't be long." He considered giving a specific time. "If I'm not back in an hour, then I have probably been cornered by paparazzi and screaming girls, and you should send the Royal Security Squad after me." But even thinking it made him feel melodramatic, so he just pulled the hood over his brow and stepped out of the hover, dragging Nancy's pear-shaped body after him. He hadn't gone far when his senses were assaulted by the chaos of the market. The smell of lemongrass, ginger, and sizzling meat. The sounds of laughing children and roaring shopkeepers and chiming sales announcements. The sweltering heat that, even in the shade, soaked straight through his sweatshirt and wrapped him in a suffocating cocoon. He unzipped the sweatshirt slightly as he walked, but dared not take down the hood. The last thing he wanted was to draw attention to himself. And the problem with being the Crown Prince was that he always drew attention. Crown Prince and soon to be Emperor. No, he couldn't think of that now. It would cripple him. The thought of losing his father and to the same devastating plague that had taken his mother years ago. The thought of ascending to the throne. The knowledge of all the people who would be relying on him to do the right thing, to make the best decisions. It was too much. He wasn't ready. Not yet. Maybe not ever. He swallowed the rising bile in his throat. He had only one prerogative today. Confirm that Lynn Cinder was capable of fixing Nancy. Only once Nancy was repaired could he proceed with his search for the princess. He let out a slow breath. And when he inhaled again, he let the aromas of street food and incense ground him back in the market. he dared to lift his head enough to get his bearings.
Though his mother had brought him to the market sometimes when he was young, it had been years since he'd been there, and it took him a moment to pick out the faded booth numbers stenciled on canopies and metal frames. He turned to the right and weaved through the crowd, past barrels of rice and tables of mangoes, hand-woven rugs and bargain-price net screens and port screens, likely name-brand imitations. Finally, he saw it. He knew it was the mechanic's booth even before he checked for the stenciled number 771. A labyrinth of storage shelves filled the space, cluttered with rusted Android prongs, dented hover car panels, bins of bolts and screws, and 1,000 different tools whose uses Kai couldn't even fathom. A table sat across the booth's entrance, draped in a grease-covered cloth and scattered with an assortment of wires and screwdrivers. A small metal foot for an escort droid, or maybe even a cyborg, sat amid the mess. It seemed so unexpected and random that Kai almost laughed. His amusement was tempered by disappointment, though. Despite the rolling door being wide open, there was no one tending the booth. Frowning, he dropped Nancy onto the table with a loud thud. He heard a gasp and another thunk. Then a girl appeared from beneath the table, rubbing the top of her head. She looked up at Kai, her expression dark with annoyance. Then she froze. He could tell the precise moment when she recognized him. His smile was instinctive. A little bit apology, a little bit politeness, and a little bit of charm because, of all the things he'd expected to come from his trip to the market, meeting a cute girl with messy hair and dirty work gloves had definitely not been one of them. "I'm sorry," he said. "I didn't realize anyone was back there." She gaped at him for another heartbeat, then two, then three, before launching herself to her feet and lowering her head in an awkward bow. "Your Highness." Grimacing, Kai glanced behind him at the milling crowd. No one else had recognized him yet. He hastily turned back and tilted toward the girl. Maybe, he drew his fingers across his lips. "On the Highness stuff?" She nodded, but there was still that baffled expression on her face, and he wasn't entirely sure she had grasped the importance of his remaining incognito. "Right. Of course. How can I... Are you..." She paused, pressing her lips tight, and lowered her gaze to his chest. He could tell she was embarrassed by her own reaction, but she wasn't blushing. At least, not yet. "I'm looking for a Lin Cinder," said Kai, still feeling bad for startling her. "Is he around?" She fidgeted with the hem of her left glove. He thought she was going to take the gloves off. They must have been as hot and uncomfortable as his sweatshirt, but she didn't. I'm Lin Cinder." Kai's eyebrows jumped in surprise. That couldn't be right. Maybe he'd misheard. Maybe Lin Cinder was a family name taken from her mechanical-minded uncle or some such. This girl was maybe Kai's age, but he guessed she was even younger. He settled a hand on Nancy's head, shifting forward. "You're Lin Cinder?" "Yes, Your High..." She hesitated again, biting her lower lip to stifle the royal title. That small, embarrassed gesture was surprisingly charming. "The mechanic." The girl, Cinder, nodded. "How can I help you?" Kai stared at the top of her head. Lin Cinder. The renown. The reputation. The approval rating. New Beijing's best mechanic was... a teenager? Kai almost laughed, but bit it back. He was amused, but more than that, he was impressed. After all, he still needed help installing the software every time he upgraded to a new port. Meanwhile, this girl ran her own mechanic business. Kai had always been curious about people in general. Torin said it was one of the qualities that would someday make him a strong emperor. And now, he was eager to know more. How did she get into this business? Where did she learn to do all this? How old was she? But Lin Cinder, ignorant of his astonishment, was still staring at his chest, still gnawing at her lower lip. Kai leaned down, putting himself directly into her line of sight, and forced her to meet his eyes. Only when he was sure she would see it did he smile at her again. He meant it to be friendly, even comforting, but by the way her eyes widened, he thought it might have served to startle her even more. At least when he straightened again, her gaze stayed on him. Her hair was pulled into a ponytail high on her head, with unkempt bangs feathered over her brow and ears. She looked like she hadn't given a passing thought to her hair or clothes that day. Maybe ever. She was pretty, but not exceptionally so. Not noticeably so. Until you bothered to look. Kai realized, with some surprise, that he was looking. Which was how he noticed a splotch of grease on her brow, half covered beneath her bangs. Another laugh caught in his lungs. It was so endearing. And such a far cry from the perfectly coiffed and bejeweled girls who he normally met that it made his fingers itch to reach across the table and rub it away. He scolded his fingers. He scolded himself. He needed to pull himself together. "You're not quite what I was expecting," he said, hoping she didn't pick up on what an enormous understatement that was. "Well, you're hardly what I, Cinder cleared her throat and dropped her gaze again, this time to Nancy. She pulled the android toward her. "What seems to be wrong with the android, Your Highness?" Kai's shoulders fell slightly, and he wasn't sure if it was due to disappointment, or relief, or a little bit of both. Nancy. He had come here for Nancy. And Princess Celine. And saving the blessed world from Queen Levana and her entire cruel, hateful race. "I can't get her to turn on. She was working fine one day, and the next, nothing." Cinder turned the android around on the table. "Have you had problems with her before?" "No." Tearing his gaze from the mechanic, Kai glanced back down at the table. His attention caught again on the small mechanical foot, and he picked it up. "She gets a monthly checkup from the Royal Mechanics, and this is the first real problem she's ever had." The foot was petite, shorter than his hand from palm to fingertips, and looked like it should have been thrown into a trash compactor ages ago. The joints were stiff and squeaky as he fidgeted with the toes, and the seams between the plating were packed with grease. A cluster of baffling wires erupted from the ankle cavity, and he couldn't help wondering what each of them did. How could a handful of wires mimic small motor skills? It amazed him every time he thought of it. Though if he were being honest, he hadn't given it all that much thought before. He noticed a fingerprint smudge on one side of the foot and rubbed it away with his sleeve. Then he realized that Cinder was watching him. He froze, unsure why he felt like he'd been caught doing something he shouldn't be. But instead of telling him to leave her stuff alone, Cinder said simply, "Aren't you hot?" He blinked. He'd almost forgotten the heat and humidity, but her words brought it rushing back. He could feel the sweat on the back of his neck, his hair clinging to his neck. "Dying," he confessed, "but I'm trying to be inconspicuous." After a moment in which he thought she might say more, Cinder looked down at Nancy again and opened the panel on her back. "Why aren't the Royal Mechanics fixing her?" "They tried, but couldn't figure it out. Someone suggested I bring her to you." Kai set the foot back on the table, then let his focus travel over the shelves that filled up the booth behind her. So many tools and pieces and parts. So many mysteries. "They say you're the best mechanic in New Beijing. I was expecting an old man." He sort of meant it as a joke, but she didn't laugh. "Do they?" she said, without removing her attention from Nancy's innards.
He wanted her to say something, to give some indication as to how she had managed to earn such a reputation so quickly. But she just said, "Sometimes they just get worn out. Maybe it's time to upgrade to a new model." It took him a second to realize she was talking about Nancy. Kai shook his head, but she wasn't looking at him.
"I'm afraid I can't do that. She contains top-secret information. It's a matter of national security that I retrieve it, before anyone else does."
He wanted to sound mysterious. He wanted to sound witty, even if it was the truth. Cinder looked up, speculation scrawled across her face. He aimed for nonchalant as he continued.
"I'm just joking. Nancy was my first android. It's sentimental."
Her brief silence was disconcerting.
"National security. Huh. Funny."
It was the most deadpan compliment he'd ever heard. She wasn't amused. If he didn't know better, he'd think she knew he was lying. "Maybe," a small voice whispered in his head. He wanted her to think he was lying. He wanted her to believe he had some life-or-death agenda that required her assistance. Maybe he was trying to impress her. At least, a little. Which was absurd. He was a prince. He was the prince. Perhaps the title itself didn't count for much, but Kai had spent his life making it more than just a title. He had studied his country's history and politics, sat in on state dinners, and quizzed his father.